This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. A News and Observer investigation has revealed huge disparities in pay among local and state officials in North Carolina. The series by reporter Dan Kane shows some officials making equal pay for positions with less responsibility than their peers. And they come from organizations that receive little public attention and are often headed by political appointees. Now, whether these officials should be getting the salary they do is open for discussion, but it's a discussion that could not happen if the public didn't have access to the pay records of these state and local employees. News and Observer investigative reporter Dan Kane joins us now. Welcome, Dan. Good to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
The series stems from a change in personnel laws that came actually as a product of articles done by the News and Observer a few years ago. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in 2010, we did a series. It ran during Sunshine Week, you know, in March, about the state's pretty restrictive personnel law. And back then, the most you could get from a public agency in North Carolina was a current salary, the most recent raise, a current position, and really, you know, not much else. And so, one of the things that you had to jump over enormous hurdles just to be able to track someone's pay over time, okay? And what we did at the News and Observer for years was just every year put in that request, you know, to, you know, certain state and local agencies, please just give us your salary database. And then, you know, thereby we were able to track, you know, how their pay was going. But it just made no sense that you couldn't get somebody's pay history. And then there were other issues that we talked about too, such as, you know, disciplinary actions, you know, employees who do wrong on the job for some reason that wasn't the public didn't, you know, wasn't entitled to know, you know, even though it's really these people are really their employees. So the series opened up the law. It made all pay public, all kinds of pay public for as far back as you have it. And it also made dismissals public. You know, if somebody's dismissed, a letter has to be written explaining why. That's public record. We've used that a number of times to, you know, get behind some of the interesting, you know, sort of disappearances of officials from state and local jobs.
This kind of transparency is vital to hold anybody accountable who is on the public payroll doing the public job. So you did this, and we opened up a little bit, and now this latest investigation. Tell us what you found.
Well, just to kind of continue with the theme here, when we did that series, one of the things that we discovered is that a lot of this pay information was actually in one place. It was in the Office of the State Treasurer. The reason why is the Treasurer's Office manages the pension system for most state and local employees, and therefore they need this information to have an idea, you know, just, you know, what their pension obligations will be. You know, kind of sort of also they do try to track to see whether or not pay is kind of fluctuating in strange ways. So the law made all that public, and we began requesting it. We got about 4 years worth, and then we started analyzing that data. And that's where, you know, obviously one of the things you look for is outliers, you know, people who don't kind of fit the norm. And so we looked at, you know, people who were making, you know, high salaries in places we hadn't expected. Tomorrow's story is going to be about folks who are making big bonuses that you wouldn't normally know about, because most of the time, you know, the public records about pay focus almost strictly on salaries. So, and these treasurer records, treasurer's records do track bonuses, do track overtime, do track other types of pay that's used for pension purposes. So we looked at those. And the other thing we looked at was big changes in pay. You know, folks who were sitting at like $200,000 suddenly at $300,000. What happened? And today's stories were – the main story was largely about community college presidents, because we noticed – and actually it was a Carolina intern who did some of the early, you know, stone turning on that, Caitlin Owens, and we found that these community college presidents' pay had suddenly jumped up. Why did that happen? And it turned out that there was a salary cap that the state had in place, you know, to try to keep community college presidents' salaries, my understanding, is kind of like around the national average. And the trustees didn't like it. I presume maybe some of these presidents didn't like it. And so these other methods of compensation got created, like housing allowances, car allowances, annuities, tens of thousands of dollars, you know, for these things given to these presidents so that they stayed under the salary cap, but they were getting more money. And when that cap was lifted in 2010, these boards and these presidents then said, well, let's just convert this all back into salary, because salary is used to calculate and generate the pension, not the car allowances, not the housing allowances, not these annuities. So all of a sudden, you know, they are looking at sizable pension boosts. I think the highest we're seeing here is in the neighborhood about $50,000.
But they've taken away the $20,000 car allowance, or maybe the $7,000 family coverage for your health benefits and all that, which were on the side and got around the cap. Mm-hmm. But so the rationale for this, let's talk about it. I mean, do we think there's any corruption going on here? Any kind of quid pro quo? Or is this the going rate? And do these trustees say, look, if we're going to get the very best, this is what we've got to pay?
Well, Frank, the only problem with that argument is there's very little documentation to support it. I mean, we had in our story today a salary survey done by one consultant that is used by Wake Tech, for example, that basically said, you know, these salaries, you know, prior to all these jumps were not really out of line. You know, the community college system, the boards of trustees that did this, you know, we asked, okay, what data did you use to determine that your guys are not getting paid enough money? And there was very little of that. You know, Wake Tech provided us a survey, but it was for presidents at private colleges and universities, which is a different animal, much bigger budgets. You know, I mean, they're dealing with some are dealing with big-time sports. I mean, it's just all kinds of research, huge amounts of research dollars going their way. Different animal.
Article pointed out as well that some of the heads of the community colleges are actually making more than chancellors of some of our four-year universities.
Yes, some of them are.
So, again, this is an accountability question. Now, we can argue about whether they're worth it, but now that we know, we can hold accountable those boards and those officials, public officials, who've made those decisions. Sunday, you made a comparison between, for instance, Raleigh's Housing Authority, the head of the Raleigh Housing Authority, and the city manager, obviously a much larger mm-hmm. responsibility. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you found there.
Well, I mean, they're basically, I should say, he's a former city manager, although I think they have hired a new person who I think is probably, I think he's making less. But, you know, they were roughly making the same amount of money. And, of course, the city is just a much, much larger entity with many, many more responsibilities, much bigger budget, many more employees than Mr. Beam, who runs the Raleigh Housing Authority.
Now, the article also pointed out he got great, very clean audits and, you know, good job, got job reviews. Mm-hmm. So there again, the public can debate whether or not, you know, that's that kind of salary is worth it. Maybe we should be paying our city manager more. The key is we got to know all this, right?
That's right. That's right. And a lot of these actions were taken in closed sessions. There wasn't a lot of documentation for a number of these folks about you know, what the rationale for this was. Some there were, but for many of them there weren't, particularly these community college presidents. And then we also ran into a brick wall with you know, a couple of colleges who just said, you know, you can't have that. That's not public record. Personnel evaluations are still not public under the public records law.
And this is a big problem, is that these boards or county commissions or city councils can go behind closed door in executive session, call it a personnel matter, and not disclose any of the deliberations that went on to reach a decision about a public official who's being paid public dollars.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, you know, the law does not require that information to be public, but these entities can, you know, these boards, they can release this information. The law gives them an out. It's kind of informally called the integrity exemption, which basically means that if a board, an agency, whatever, if their integrity is kind of in question, they can release this personnel information. Now, there's some personnel information, obviously, you can't release. Social Security number, you can't release that. Law's clear. That's all the whole identity theft stuff, sure, that shouldn't be public. But, you know, decisions being made about why you're keeping somebody or letting them go or giving them a big pay raise or cutting their pay, you know, they have the opportunity under the law to make that public. It's their decision. But it's not automatically public.
Well, and it's a question about whether it should be their decision or whether this is, in fact, in any kind of rational way in the public domain. How does North Carolina compare to other states and what gets kept secret?
Well, North Carolina got a lot better in 2010 when they opened up the personnel law. But there are a number of other states that have more transparency on personnel matters. The one that usually gets held up there is Florida. Florida, it's practically, you know, anything. South Carolina, I think, is better in this. I'm trying to think. I couldn't give you like a rundown of state by state, mm-hmm. like which ones, you know, make like personnel evaluations public. But there are a number that do, and, you know, it's not like they haven't fallen into the ocean for doing so, right. You know.
Things might even be better. Who knows? Dan, mm-hmm. thanks for all your hard work. Good to have you on the program.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Dan Kane, investigative reporter for The News and Observer. Just ahead, WUNC education reporter Dave DeWitt takes us inside his new series on teachers. Stay with us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.